Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. Coming up today, a reflection on the Gospel reading for this 33rd Sunday in Ordinary Time by Canadian Father Bernard O'Connor. And our regular guest Joan Lewis is back with all the latest behind-the-scenes news of events here in the Vatican. We begin today's programme with a reflection on the Gospel reading for this 33rd Sunday in Ordinary Time. Today we're going to hear reflections from Canadian Father Bernard O'Connor, who works at the Vatican's Congregation for Eastern Churches. He shares with us his thoughts on the reading from St. Mark chapter 13. Let's listen first, though, to the words of that Gospel passage, read to us by Sean Patrick Lovett.
Jesus said to his disciples, "In those days after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from the sky, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory, and then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds and from the ends of the earth to the ends of the sky. Learn a lesson from the fig tree. When its branch becomes tender and sprouts leaves, you know that summer is near. In the same way, when you see these things happening, know that he is near, at the gates. Amen, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day or hour, no one knows. Neither the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father."
Brothers and sisters, welcome. My name is Father Bernard O'Connor from Canada, and serving in the Vatican's Congregation for Eastern Churches. It is my pleasure to share with you a reflection upon the scriptural texts for this, the 33rd Sunday in Ordinary Time. Were you a bit startled by the language which Mark uses in our Gospel passage? For example, he tells us that the Jewish people of his era would experience a terrible tribulation. The word tribulation refers to a period of great suffering. It would be as if the very structure of the earth and heavens would be shaken, and everything familiar would become confused and disordered. That is why Mark says that the sun and moon, normally sources of light, will be darkened, and the stars, which have guided people for centuries, especially travellers, will no longer be seen as fixed in their trustworthy positions in the sky, but will appear to fall at random. The powers in the heavens will be devastated, Mark says. Instead of assisting mankind, they will act against their own nature and against humanity. What did this mean for the Jews 2,000 years ago? Those who are expert in Holy Scripture advise us not to apply these words literally to our own time. For example, it is incorrect to assume that these lines refer to something which is still to occur and which may happen to our own children or grandchildren. Mark is not describing the end of the world as we know it. Rather, these verses are almost certainly a reference to the destruction of the Jewish temple in 70 AD by a Roman army. For pious Jews, the temple was the centerpiece of their spiritual existence. Nothing mattered more in their daily lives. With the loss of the temple, it was as if the whole of reality had collapsed and was in chaos. The imagery given us by Mark truly describes how devout Jews felt about their overwhelming pain. Because the temple was no more, nothing above in the heavens or below on the earth then made sense. All meaning for their lives was lost. But notice what Mark says next. After speaking of this unimaginable scene, he offers a sign of hope. In the midst of the dreadful turmoil, the Son of Man comes forward to aid his people in their anguish. That Son of Man is no one other than Jesus. What Mark intends for us to understand is that when everything seems in shambles and in upheaval, it is then that Jesus the Savior is most present. Remember that with his death upon the cross, even some of his disciples were sure that this was the end of him and his message. But the resurrection on the first Easter morning proved that he had conquered the power of death. Brothers and sisters, you may be afflicted with many trials and hardships, and you may feel shattered, like those Jews of old when deprived of their temple. And when recalling the words of the prophet Daniel, today's first reading, you may even feel that much of your entire life has been filled with strife and misfortune. That seems to be the case of so much of the Jews' history. I am rather convinced that the original listeners to Mark's Gospel must have also recalled Daniel. He is said to have been a sage during the period of the Babylonian exile, a time several hundred years before Mark, when the Jews had been forcibly exiled from their homeland. It was an era when most were persuaded that they might never return. In fact, however, they did. And Daniel urged his people to realize that their captivity meant national purification, while their eventual release would mean a reaffirmation of their love and fidelity for God, their rescuer. We may not be aware, however, that the book of Daniel was actually penned about 400 years after the events which it describes. Not surprisingly, this corresponded to another persecution of the Jews by the Syrian king Antiochus Epiphanes. Here was a king who was determined to seduce the Jews from observance of their religious heritage, the law, as it is called. The message of Daniel was intended to console them and to appeal to their sense of courage. God would not abandon them, neither in the past, nor in the present, nor in the future. Given the atrocity of the much later Holocaust and the turmoil continually hampering the model Middle East, the lesson is worth remembering. And for us Christians, that same lesson is no less important, for our faith is regularly under assault by the destructive forces of media hostility and of a secular outlook which rejects so much of what we believe and value. Yet in such a moment, we are again invited to reach out to Jesus the Lord, for he is with each of us in our crisis, whether it be individually or as a church, and he makes of that crisis our comfort and our peace.
Thanks there to Father Bernard O'Connor, an official at the Vatican's Congregation for Eastern Churches. And now our regular guest Joan Lewis is back with a behind-the-scenes look at events here in the Vatican over the past 7 days. Joan, welcome back. Nice to see you again. I know you have been away, haven't you, for just a few days.
Just a few days, as they say, viaggio lampo, in a very quick trip in Italian to Washington and a place in Texas. I've not been in Texas for many years, but there's a very beautiful resort called Horseshoe Bay. And the Paulist Fathers have a church there, and I was part of a big Paulist event and MC at a dinner in which they asked me to talk about covering the Vatican, covering the Pope, and being EWTN bureau chief and a lot of other things. It was fun.
Meanwhile, here in the Vatican, Pope Benedict has also been traveling. Yes, he was back last weekend in Brescia, of course, city most perhaps well known to people outside Italy as the city where Pope Paul VI came from.
Right, exactly. And Brescia is just northern Italy, of course, just 60 or so miles, I think, east of Milan. And it seems like really almost the highlight of the day was the weather. It was the, you know, pouring rain, chilly, cold, people under umbrellas, huddled together for warmth. Give me your huddled masses, I think it says on the statue.
Still quite an impressive turnout, considering how bad the weather
was. 15,000 people in the main square for Mass. There was the Angelus afterwards. The Holy Father visited as much as he could in the region, in the sense of, I mean, in Brescia, and then in Concesio, where actually Paul VI was born. He visited the church he was baptized in and so forth. And then he inaugurated the new headquarters of the Paul VI Institute. But very, very interesting talks, obviously, highlighting his predecessor's works and so much of what he said. And I know that in his homily, for example, he quoted quite, Benedict quoted quite extensively from Paul VI's 1968 speech, in which he noted that the Catholic faithful's expectations for the Pope, that a Pope should lead with impressive, energetic, and decisive interventions. And the Pope really highlighted how important the Church was for Pope Paul VI, and how the Church, and he said something similar in another speech this week, how important the Church should be in the lives of the faithful, no matter what they do, the importance of the Church for young people. The Pope spoke at length about young people and how important they were to Paul VI. So,
really highlighting the relevance of Paul VI's writings and teachings to the church today still.
Oh, exactly. And then, of course, I don't know if our listeners know or remember, it would depend on one's age, I guess, that in 1977, just a year before he died, Paul VI named a young man called Joseph Ratzinger. He made him a cardinal. He was 50 at the time, and he was then the Cardinal Archbishop of Munich, and of course, you know, called just a few years later by John Paul II to come to Rome. So it was a very meaningful trip. I like the attention when you look back over his Benedict's pontificate, how much attention he has given to his predecessors. Obviously, to John Paul II, A, he knew him better, B, his pontificate was so very long. So a remarkable visit and an honor for, of course, the people of Brescia. It's always nice to know that your son, your native son, is not forgotten.
Meanwhile, here in the Vatican, there's been quite a lot going on this week, a number of very important conferences, congresses, particularly the Pontifical Council, rather, for migrants and itinerant people, people on the move. That was going on, wasn't it, here throughout this week, and Pope Benedict met with them at near the beginning of the conference.
Yes, he did on Monday. As a matter of fact, it was the sixth World Congress on the Pastoral Care of Migrants, and there were about 300 participants from five different continents, obviously, including 28 from 12 Asian countries. And the Pope met them in a special audience in the Vatican's, in the Clementine Hall. And he said something so important that it's so easy to forget when we read about migrants every day on the front page of papers, you know, the U.S. Congress looking at how to handle immigration, migrant issues in a matter of health care. In Europe, especially here in Italy, so many migrants try to come from, should we say, North Africa. They overcrowd boats overturn, people die. I mean, they always seem to be in the news here. But the Pope said migrants are a resource, and he said they're not a problem, because that's the word problem that most people do use with the migrants. And the Pope said migration asks us to look at the unity of the human family and how the receiving countries should have very hospitable, warm, welcoming to migrants. And, of course, the way they define migrants, I guess we both are.
I guess we all are.
We are not you know, living and working in the lands of our birth. And there's many, many reasons why people do go abroad. I mean, a student is a migrant from that point of view.
And indeed, the Vatican's Council does have a particular area that caters for the needs of students.
You know, if you go to the website, really, of the council, and if you look at the different groups, migrants and refugees and people on the move would be actually is a name I think they use for their magazine. But it's circus people. It's people who spend their lives on the road, like truck drivers, or just people who travel for a living, sales people, and they're in a car. It's people who are pilots and work on ships, and anybody who's on the move for their job. But then there's also, I think, what the Pope is probably highlighting in this is forced migration, in the sense of people, because of war or whatever famine, the reason may be, famine, exactly, they have to seek a job elsewhere. So,
but as you say, he was highlighting very much the resources and the important contributions these
that they
people
can make,
make.
Right. And, you know, I have to say, I think of my own country. My grandparents came from Europe. On my mom's side, you know, were German and Swiss. On my dad's side, were Welsh and Irish. And they all came to America. They migrated to America, all of them making, you know, huge contributions. But I mean, and I'm sure at times, I know there were problems. If you were Irish, there were problems. There, if you were whatever, there were problems. But they really made their way. And I think that's really what the Pope is trying to emphasize, you know, to the receiving countries, to welcome them. The migrants have to try and fit in also to the local culture. You and I don't insist that English be spoken to us. We live in Italy. We speak Italian.
And very much the other issue that the president of the council, Archbishop Velior, was underlining was the fact that this question of welcoming migrants is actually very much a life issue, and people who are claiming to defend life must defend all forms of life and all different people from different walks of life. And he was including this very much as part of that issue.
Because they are doing that. They're trying to live. They're trying to help their families to live. In the case of maybe one of the parents, usually a father, it would be where just one parent migrates and then is going to send money back. And the Pope spoke of the unity of the family, of the human family, but also the unity, really, of the migrant's family.
There was also an important congress going on this week, a five-day conference on astrobiology. Now, this is perhaps something a little bit different from the conferences that we normally see around in the Vatican. It certainly got quite a lot of press attention, I noticed. It was really talking about other forms of life.
Exactly.
Wasn't it?
And that really was the headline. If you went on the internet and just kind of looked at all the newspapers, it was, you know, Church seeks extraterrestrial life, Church looking for aliens, etc.
ET Phone Rome was another one I saw.
Oh, there were some really wonderful headlines. And that's a congress seminar I would just love to have attended and learned. And of course, astrobiology, you mentioned, and that is the branch of biology that investigates the existence of living organisms on planets other than Earth. And of course, this was organized, I don't remember if we said, by the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and the Vatican Observatory. And the Jesuit Father Jose Funes, of course, the director of the Vatican Observatory, explained to those who said, why would the Vatican be looking at this? He said, this is quite an appropriate topic, actually, for the Academy, which has a multidisciplinary membership in the first place. And it's a field, astrobiology, which combines research in astronomy, cosmology, biology, chemistry, geology, and physics. And he said, of course, this is not the first time that this has been taken up. The observatory itself has looked at it. And he said, it's an emerging field. We all know that. And still a developing one. But he said, the question of life's origins and of whether life exists elsewhere are very interesting and deserve serious consideration because they offer many philosophical and theological implications. And I think as outsiders, we might not think of something like that.
As you say, it would have been very interesting to take part in that conference.
Oh, I would have loved it.
Listen to the many interventions and
Well, I've taken part in a number of things that the observatory has done, especially when they were out of Castel Gandolfo. Well, they still are, but I mean when they were right there in the Papal Apostolic Palace. And fascinating events. Fascinating to me because I'm not an astronomer.
Yes.
Right. So a fascinating field of study and many wonderful implications, as we heard the results of this Congress by other members too. I just quoted Father Funes, but there were a lot of other interesting
visiting
input.
Professors from many countries, including America.
Yes, we had a professor, Chris Impey, I believe is how you say his name, the University of Arizona, and the Stewart Observatory in Tucson, where, by the way, the Vatican has its VATT, the Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope. So our real working observatory is there. And actually, Professor Impey said if biology is not unique to the Earth, so life, or if life elsewhere differs biochemically from our own version, or if we make contact with an intelligent species in the vastness of space, he said the implications for our self-image will be profound. And, you know, you just kind of want to sit back in silence after you hear a sentence like that.
A lot of food for thought there. Meanwhile, Pope Benedict also gave us quite a lot of food for thought at his Wednesday general audience again, didn't he? He's been continuing this series of talks on the church in the Middle Ages. And, again, he picked up where he left off the previous week on Wednesday.
He did. He talked about the monastic reform in the Middle Ages, Christian culture in the Middle Ages, and turned to the monastic reform, especially in the great monastery of Cluny. And, of course, that was founded 1,100 years ago. And he noted that this restored the strict observance of the rule of Saint Benedict and made the church's liturgy the center of its life. And he went at length to talk about the specifically wonderful and beautiful things linked with Cluny, linked, again, with the liturgy of the hours, with Mass. And he said, Cluny's reputation for sanctity and learning caused its influence to spread in monasteries throughout Europe. And because it was exempt from interference by feudal authorities, the monastery freely elected its abbot and flourished under a series, of course, of great leaders. And he noted that Cluny also contributed to the reform of the universal church, its concern for holiness, the restoration of clerical celibacy, and the elimination of simony. And here, I think, is one of the important things that the Pope noted. He said, at a formative time in Europe's history, Cluny helped to forge the continent's Christian identity by its emphasis on the primacy of the spirit, respect for human dignity, commitment to peace, and an authentic and integral humanism. And I think if we think of those remarks also in the context of a recent sentence by the European Court that, you know, classrooms should not have crucifixes in them. And it's like all of a sudden Europe is trying, especially with its constitution and everything else, to just deny Christianity. You can't deny Christianity in the roots and in the history of Europe. Look at the universities, look at the hospitals, look at the libraries. And the Pope has brought that into an awful lot of discussions lately.
And so perhaps this audience was reflecting not only on the Middle Ages, but also the relevance of that heritage for
Europe and beyond. The Christian culture. It's, you know, you just can't deny it because then you're denying history.
Well, there's been a lot of focus on these conferences here in the Vatican. Of course, in the newspapers and on television around the world this week, there's been a big focus on this important 20th anniversary that we've just been marking, the anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And, of course, a lot of reflection here in the Vatican on the role that Pope John Paul II really played in those events that unfolded in November and December 1989.
A phenomenal period in history. I think anybody probably above the age of reason really remembers sitting in front of their television, unless they were in Berlin and actually at the wall, which, you know, on November 9th, 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall, obviously leading country by country to the fall of communism. And, of course, the Vatican newspaper, the Vatican Daily Osservatore Romano, did recall this anniversary. And there was an article that expressed the hope that the memory of the evils of the past served to avoid evils of the future. And in the article, they pointed out that Berlin celebrated in its streets and on its squares the anniversary, of course, of the fall of the wall. There were concerts. There were immensely beautiful events to mark this. But the main focus of the article was, of course, how happy Germans are to be able to celebrate something positive. Dozens of errors, said the newspaper article, have now been paid for, and there's a great deal to celebrate. A reborn city, such as Berlin, that is beautiful and full of life, is now a center of attraction for young people, artists, and intellectuals all over Europe who sense the energy of the future here, perhaps unique among all European capitals.
And in fact, there were many young people I know also around taking part in those celebrations. I think the political leaders were keen to focus on the future of the city as we look back to this important event in the past.
And I know that Father Federico Lombardi, of course, head of Vatican Radio, TV, and the press office, he also did a wonderful piece on this, made observations of his own in Octava Dies, a weekly program produced by the Vatican Television Center. But definitely a very important anniversary that we really have to sit back and ponder.
Just time for one more story, perhaps a little bit of a lighter story. Pope Benedict released a new CD, we could say, this week, couldn't we? And there was a lot of interest in that as well.
Exactly. Earlier this week, the album, which was entitled Alma Mater Music from the Vatican, that was presented to the media. And I understand that the CD actually only goes on sale on November 30th. So A, just in time for Christmas. And B, I'm not sure now if people can pre-order. I mean, as they listen to us and quickly go to their computer and look for it. But the Pope, it's like the Pope's voice singing and praying can be heard on 10 minutes of, I think, the 49 minutes. And what it is, it's actually Alma Mater is 8 original pieces of contemporary music interwoven with Gregorian chants and the Pope's voice. Now, the Pope did not come into a studio like where we are today to do this, obviously, and of course there's an orchestral background and everything else. His voice is the property of Vatican Radio, and various pieces were selected to put on this CD. And interestingly enough, we should note, because this is so important, part of the proceeds of the sale of this CD will go to fund music education for underprivileged children throughout the world. And even months ago when they announced that this CD would be coming out in the fall, they made that a very important point.
Building a little bit on the success of Abba Pater was the title, wasn't it, of Pope
John
Paul II, again, featuring his voice with original music composed for the occasion.
Exactly. I have that CD at home, and I think that, I don't remember the year in which it came out. I want to say around
towards
the Jubilee
time. I was going to say
time,
something like that.
But no, I think it's going to be, I certainly hope for the children who it's going to benefit that it is a huge success. And you have artists who are not all associated with the Vatican, musicians, people who have written, you know, the music, the composers. And I failed to say that Pope Benedict is accompanied by the choir of the Philharmonic Academy of Rome, which was recorded, of course, in St. Peter's Basilica, and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, which recorded in London at the Abbey Road Studios. So the three tracks were all mixed to in a studio outside Rome to produce the album. So ought it be very interesting.
Thank you very much indeed, Joan. Good to have you with us again this week. We'll see you again at this same time next week.
God bless.
Thanks there to our regular guest, Joan Lewis. She'll be back again at this same time next week with another look at events here in the Vatican over the past 7 days. And that's all from us here at the English programme for today. You can join us again at this same time tomorrow for another edition of our English feature programme. Or don't forget, you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. Now stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.